What motivates you?
Food.
Food. Okay, let me clarify. What type of feedback motivates you? Because I think there are two different kinds of people. You have people who need to be told how great they are, mm-hmm. like really positive stuff, like, wow, you are an amazing runner, even though if you're not. But some people, like, they feed off of that and they start to believe their own, you know, publicity, which is fine, you know. Yeah. But then there's the other type of person who gets motivated when people tell them that they can't do something.
Yeah.
That's me.
I think I can think of examples in my life where it's been both for me.
Okay.
Yeah. I had a professor in college who was like, you're not going to do TV. And I'm like, watch me.
Yeah. Look at you now. Where's that professor? So our guest today is a guy named Matt DiBenedetto, and he is definitely, I would say, the latter. He is the true definition, I think, of an underdog. Did you see the Daytona 500?
I didn't this year.
Oh, my gosh. I've never asked somebody that question before. But I did watch it because I knew we were going to be talking to Matt. Matt led that race for most of it, and then with 10 laps to go, was in this unbelievable crash that everybody watched on the news later that night. 21 cars. Like, he walked out of it, which is a good thing. Yeah. But at one point, one of his spotters said over the radio, oh God, no Jesus, which is never good. Like, you never say that for good things. It's always because something bad is about to happen. Well, Matt came out of the crash and has quite a story to tell. But the real story that I am so fascinated by is the idea that this guy does not come from a racing background. He did not grow up in a family where you were going down to the track every weekend. He was truly somebody who saw it, tried it, and found out he was incredibly good at it. So we're going to find out on this Dying to Ask how he did that, and then also get a lot of his goal-setting tips, because when people constantly underestimate what you're going to do, you have to have a certain kind of personality trait that helps you kind of work through that and then rise to the top of your sport. Till you get into that crash, and then it gets kind of ugly. Sound good?
Sounds great.
All right. Do I need to get you a snack to motivate you, or are you good? You're with me on this one.
I mean, I wouldn't say no to a snack.
No, I know that. All right. Here is Matt DiBenedetto on Dying to Ask.
I'm Deirdre Fitzpatrick, and I am obsessed with knowing how people do things. I write the book. They start the company. They go from idea to reality. I call it the art of the follow-through, and I want to know how people go from A to B. This is the Dying to Ask podcast.
Matt DiBenedetto, welcome to the Dying to Ask podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Oh, we're excited to have you. You know, it's funny. We were supposed to talk to you a couple of weeks ago, and then your Daytona schedule got all wonky. And then Daytona happened, and I'm so glad that we rescheduled it, because that was a crazy, crazy race.
Yeah.
But I don't have to tell you that.
Not the finish we wanted, but definitely, we led the most laps in the Daytona 500, so that's... obviously not a bad start to the season, so that was really cool. Good way to start off the year with a new team and showing everybody what we're here to do.
Oh my gosh, it was amazing. So who are you racing with these days?
So this year is Levine Family Racing is who I'm driving for, and we are a Toyota team. So my first year with the team, back with Toyota. Toyota's actually where I got my start in NASCAR. So it's kind of like, it's a lot of change, but also I feel kind of back. Well,
they, they say that Toyotas last forever unless they, of course, you drive them the way you drive them. And then you got to work on it from time to time.
And, and my shoes.
Oh, very nice. Very nice. Matt's holding up some really nice slip-on shoes that are like covered with Toyota, which is one of the perks of being a racer.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about that race, because you went into it, and I read a really funny article where you actually looked up, I guess, the odds for you to win the race, and it was at one point like 200-1. And I read some really funny stuff where you were like not happy about that going into the race, that the number was where it was. And obviously it jumped up before the race. And then you get into the race and you led the thing for most of it.
That was hilarious. I looked at the odds. I'm like, hang on a second. I have the best opportunity of my entire life this year. We're going to have fast race cars. And we're like at a point, I think it was like 200-1. I'm like, what in the world? And sure enough, the odds changed. Cause then in our dual race, we finished fourth. We were fast. And then the 500, we led the most laps and we're quite the contender to win. So I think it was kind of fun that I called out the odds like that.
I thought it was great. Did you actually place a bet on yourself, or is that bad luck?
No. So I didn't. We're not allowed to. So if you're like, I don't know how all the restraints work, but if you're, in the sport or involved or have any inside info or whatever, you can't place any bets.
Kind of bad form. I would think so.
Yeah, but I can give public knowledge and say, hey guys, this is a good bet.
We're probably pretty good. So yeah. when you're in a race that long and you're leading, did you feel like you had it the whole time? I'm curious to know, like, what's the psychology of a race like that, especially if you are up in the front?
Man, that one is mentally exhausting more than anything, just trying to run 500 miles in a pack at 200 miles an hour, and it's just out of control. The end of those races get nuts, and you have to put everything together perfect, pit stops, you know, you're, and especially that race, we were basically in control of a lot of the race, leading the most laps. So when you're doing that, all the pressure is kind of on you.
Oh, I'll say. So then you get up to, you know, the last, you're in fourth position, I think, by the time, you know, and it's looking really good. And then there was a massive crash. And this is the one that got replayed on TV across the country over and over again. There was something like 21 cars that pile up. Do you like have a full memory of all of that? Or is there like this wonderful thing that happens to racers where you're able to blank some of that out so that you can go back to the track the next day?
I wish I could block it out.
Will you take us through it? Because we see that stuff on TV, and as spectators, it's like, wow. And the truth is, that's what keeps us coming back. That's what keeps it so exciting. What's it like actually as a racer when you're in that?
Yeah. So obviously it was nine laps to go, I think. And that's when everyone's getting antsy and you got to make all your moves. Basically, you're going to hold it to the floor no matter what. And I saw we were third, fourth place. Had a run, and we were the leader of the outside line, and I saw the 21 car coming behind me. I kind of went to block that lane and, you know, hoping he would push and that we would go to the front. And he tried to get around me, and there wasn't room, and clipped my bumper and turned us. And then after that, all I know is I just took my hands off the wheel, and I was basically bouncing around like a pinball.
Wow. Is that like the line in the song, Jesus Take the Wheel? You kind of hope for the best at that point?
Yep. Yep, yeah. You're crashing, so you just take your hands off the wheel so then it doesn't, you know, jerk your hand or hurt your wrist or anything like that.
Right.
But, yep, you're just along for the ride then.
That's interesting. What's the big thing you get out of that after when you walk away from that? Is there a feeling of, I walked away from it, or are you irritated and angry that you didn't get ahead of that?
Oh, definitely irritated for sure, or disappointed or heartbroken, or insert any of those. More than anything, these race cars are so safe. Honestly, I think, I think too, that's why at the end of these races, it gets so wild and crazy and there'll be those pileups and stuff, is because, I mean, it sounds crazy to say, but our race cars are so safe that we're just like, screw it, hold it to the floor and wreck. You don't even worry about your body. You know, the cars have gotten so safe. You know, not to say that you can't get hurt or right. get a concussion or anything like that. But, I mean, for the most part, you know, we know we'll come out of it, you know, mostly okay.
Does that lead to any awkward encounters in the pits at all afterwards? If they're, like, say, like the 21 car, did you and him talk after the race?
I'd have words.
Yeah. Yep, we did, actually. We talked right after. So I got out of the care center, saw him. He actually came over to me immediately. Paul Menard's actually a friend of mine. And it's hard to be mad at people at Daytona. It's the Daytona 500. The race is always crazy. There's always crashes. And it's just hard when you're grouped together in a pack of 40 running, you know, all out. That stuff just happened. So he came over immediately. It was like, man, I'm sorry. And just, it was a racing deal. It wasn't really... You really can't place blame or be mad at him. It's just bracing for the win in the biggest race of the year. So yeah. It happens.
I have a coworker who almost backed into me just as we were coming into the parking lot today. And I got to say, I don't know that I would have been. And I told him, I'm like, I would not have been real happy if you'd actually bumped into me. So you guys are far more generous. What is it you love about racing?
Everything. I'm very competitive. So one thing I can tell people about me is I don't do very many things in life, and that's for a reason, because if I'm not good at anything, or if I can't be 100% all in on it, I don't want to do it. So that's why I only do a couple things, period. And racing's just been that thing for my life that's basically completed me. It's all I've ever, you know, had a main passion for. My family didn't grow up racing or anything. It was just me. So that's all I enjoy. I like being competitive, and I enjoy the, obviously racing is definitely that.
Oh, and then some.
All I'm acclimated to.
And it is your background that I think is so incredibly intriguing. And I'm dying to ask, we'd love to know how people come up with this idea and then they actually pull it off. And if you go back into your background, I don't know that as a little boy, I would have picked you to be doing what you're doing right now based on where you grew up and even your family and what they were into. So we're going to take a quick break. And after that, we'll go back into Matt's childhood and figure out how he became perhaps the ultimate underdog after this.
4 a.m. It's a new day. Okay, so the roosters aren't even awake yet. But KCLA 3 Morning News is. If it happened overnight, Deirdre, Teo, Tony, and Ty have got it covered. Tamara's forecast is so accurate, your day practically plans itself. And Melody monitors the roadways so you always have the best routes to work. It may be too early to see the sun, but you can always see the 3 and get the 3. News, weather, traffic. KCLA 3 from 4 to 7, where the news comes first.
Matt, are you an anomaly on the NASCAR circuit in that you did not grow up in a family of racers or with a long history of doing this?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, most everybody has some sort of story or reason of why they got into racing because their dad or their family did this or, you know, raced in some sort of, some sort of way, shape or form. But yeah, my story is kind of odd. My dad he liked cars, so I get where I get the passion from. I mean, he liked, you know, he built some cool street cars and things like that back in the day. And
you grew up in Grass Valley, California, which is a foothill town. Explain to people like what Grass Valley is like.
So yeah, small town.
I mean, it's not like Charlotte, you know, Charlotte, North Carolina, or anything.
No, Grass Valley's small. It's foothills outside of Sacramento. So yeah, about an hour from Sac, and definitely quiet. A lot of you know, forest and woods and very quiet area. So I like that. But yeah, not the normal story that you would hear. My family, my dad, the closest he got to racing was he had a drag car that he played around with for a little bit. That was it.
So how do you start driving fast if you're not exposed to it like that?
Four wheelers and dirt bikes.
There you
Luckily,
go.
That's the perk of being in Grass Valley. We lived on 6 or 6.5 acres. So it was nice green grass and beautiful land until I got a hold of my first four wheeler and I ripped it all to pieces. So it turned into dirt and jumps and a big mess of 6 acres that I got to tear all to heck.
That is so funny.
Did you ever do the Hangtown Classic?
What's that?
Did you ever do the Hangtown Classic?
No, what's that?
It's a dirt bike race that's just outside of Placerville.
Oh, no. I didn't ever like race or ride them competitively. It was more just me and friends and stuff. And we would, luckily, it was cool. A bunch of friends that lived in Grass Valley, I went to school with. Some of them had dirt bikes, four wheelers. So our property turned into the ultimate racetrack.
Yeah. You know, my brother-in-law was a motorcycle drag racer back in the day. And from what I hear, he had this, like, the gene where you just don't seem to notice speed. And I'm curious to know, like, when you're out there, you know, four-wheeling and everything else, do people just realize, like, you drove things a little differently than other kids?
Yeah, I was definitely way more on the wide-open side than most people. So that's where it was. I was 5 years old, so I'll shorten the story. But we lived, there was a road, like, it's quiet, obviously, no traffic, nothing. So there was a road, and then you have our property on one side, and then there was another little field and property on the other side. But it was way down, kind of, it was down like a little hill. So I would ride my four-wheeler onto this other property and then turn and go wide open and jump the road, like the whole road at 5 years old.
You're five?
Yeah, and my dad saw me one day and freaked out. And I was riding with my sister's ex-boyfriend, and my dad was yelling at him, like, what are you doing? Why are you letting him do that? But he was like, yeah, but he can do it, no problem. My dad's like, yeah, but he's still five.
We should point out, though, you were the youngest in your family and a fourth child?
Yep.
And typically in a family of four where you have the youngest and there's an age gap, you kind of raise yourself, you know?
Yeah. So my parents laugh and say they were tired by the time I came around. So I'm 27 and my, you know, my sisters and brother are in their upper 30s or 40. So I'm definitely a little ways behind. My dad was actually scheduled for his vasectomy about the same time as I came along. So
scheduling,
to say the least, I wasn't planned.
So how do you go from being this crazy 5-year-old to actually pursuing this? What happened where people were like, you know, your kid's a little different and he's got some talent.
Yeah, so I watch NASCAR every single week. My dad was flipping through the channels, passed by NASCAR one day in the midst of me riding four wheelers and doing all that mess. And I made him go back to it, and he was like, what do you want to watch that for? We've never watched NASCAR. And so I made him watch it every single week, and I played baseball. And luckily, a kid that we played baseball with found out that I loved racing, and they raced at a local dirt track out there, Cycleland Speedway in Chico, California, where I grew up racing. And so they were like, oh, Matt loves racing. Come check it out. And of course, that's how it all started.
And that's how it started. And it got good enough that your parents actually moved out east to have you pursue this.
Yeah. So we just did it for fun. And I mean, we were winning everything, winning championships, doing all that and cleaning up pretty good. But for us, it was just for fun. We never, you know, my parents were never thinking of it seriously. It was more other people actually telling my parents and us like, hey, you know, Matt's got the talent. You need to, you know, pursue this. The East Coast is where, you know, NASCAR and racing is big. And so we were naive enough to move across country and tackle a journey that we had no idea what we were getting ourselves into.
And what's crazy is you were 12 years old at the time.
Yeah. Yep. That was, we were talking about it at 12 years old and ended up just doing it, visiting out here and picked a place and moved.
What's it like to be in a sport where, on paper, at least, you probably shouldn't be there, you know? And I only mean that in that you always hear about these big racers who say, oh, you know, I was born on the track, you know? I was there from the time I was born, and my dad raced, and that kind of thing. What is it like to achieve great things in a sport and have to be really scrappy? I would imagine you kind of have to be a little bit scrappier along the way because people aren't necessarily seeing you as the guy to beat from the beginning. I think they are now, yeah. But I don't think they were back then. Yeah.
No, it's that's what's actually made me a lot better is because my situation is unorthodox. That's the word I always use. But
is that the polite word you can use? Unorthodox?
Yeah, for sure. It's, yeah, weird situation.
Right.
Not normal for sure. But that's what's made me a lot better is because it's made me have to push and convince people and show people through just raw ability and my passion. That, you know, I'm here to do this and I can do this. So it's been a long, long journey that I feel like I need to write a book on when I'm done. It's been so nuts, like how thousands of things had to line up perfectly or I still wouldn't be here today despite all the hard work.
Why do you think you are so good?
Man, I think everybody has things that they're passionate for and they're good at, whether it's a hobby or whatever. This is all that I'm passionate. I think when you're, you know, thank goodness I have the, you know, God-given ability to just drive a race car. And that's, I'm not very good at many other things. So let me start by telling you that.
So. What are you really bad at that people would think that you would be good at?
Basketball. I'm a coordinated guy, but definitely not one that would be first pick on a basketball team. Football, I'm like mediocre. Part of the thing, I'm just passionate about one thing, and that's primarily racing. So I think that's when you're that passionate about something, that's all you live for, to strive to be the best at, and you thank goodness have the natural ability at it, then, you know, that's going to make you work hard to be the best.
Are you an overachiever type? Like, do you thrive off of people not having the higher expectations, especially earlier in your career?
Yeah, so that's been my whole journey to get here is always having to overachieve because I've always been in, you know, underfunded situations until now. But, you know, and I've driven for very small teams, family teams, just trying to do the best I can with, you know, underfunded equipment. And I've always had to get in it and, you know, been fortunate enough to get the most out of everybody and the race team and get all the best finishes in team's existence. And that's how I've done it every step of the way. And that's what got me my opportunity with LFR this year, but that's the path I've had to go.
Doesn't it make you appreciate it in a different way than maybe some of the other guys that you meet?
Oh, a million times more. Yeah. I mean, everyone here is passionate. All the racers, NASCAR drivers, everybody here is like, it's amazing actually how much all of them love the sport and really care. But yeah, my path, I couldn't possibly appreciate it as much as I do if I had just kind of been in top stuff all the way and got right to the top, you know. It being a really, really tough journey is what makes you love it and appreciate it more when you do get these opportunities.
We need to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk to you a little bit about goal setting and then also some of the stuff that goes into being so singularly focused on racing, because it's not just driving. You do all this other stuff off the track that I think is equally as interesting and exhausting. Maybe not as scary as the driving, but we'll do that right after this.
KCRA3, your best choice for news at 11.
Live team coverage tonight.
No Sacramento station covers Northern California better than KCRA3.
We have breaking news on that rescue.
With resources to bring you the story wherever it happens.
Get those cannons away from me!
And detailed perspectives you won't see anywhere else.
Livecopter 3 shows that fire burning.
The experience you've come to trust every night.
Here's what we know right now.
Your best choice for news at 11. KCRA3, where the news comes first.
So there's kind of a popular, I think, misconception that NASCAR drivers aren't necessarily athletic. Like, because people, when they're driving to work, they're just like cruising along, and it's like, well, how hard is it to drive and turn left, you know? So can you just tell us a little bit about your just outside of racing regiment, just to stay fit enough to drive at the level that you drive?
Yeah, so I encourage anyone to watch a video. You just pull up YouTube, and they did a study on Denny Hamlin during a race, which was actually really cool. If your body going through basically having a fever, 130, 140 degrees inside the race car for hours, how high your heart rate is, the adrenaline, all that. So how taxing it is on your body. So I won't get into all that. But yes, physically, we talk about my passions. And the other one I have, which thank goodness relates to racing and my job, is I've taken up CrossFit in the past year. I worked out before that, but I wanted to make a change. I got kind of burnt out and I switched.
I think taking up might be a little bit of an understatement, though. I've looked at your Instagram. Like, you're kind of hardcore into it.
Definitely. My life consists of eating, racing, and going to our place. It's CrossFit Catawba Valley is where I live, in Hickory, where I live, North Carolina. But yeah, I definitely put in my my fair share of work. I actually just got today. They just posted. I got the athlete of the month. So it's been a year in the making.
Oh, wow.
Nice. You're trying.
Forget Daytona. Yeah. You're the athlete of the month at CrossFit.
Yeah. That was another big achievement for me. I was excited. Yeah. I was probably overly excited about that one. People were like,
did anyone place bets on that one?
No, it's been a struggle. I get my butt kicked by girls in there and like, you know, all kinds of people every day. It's very humbling.
You can't imagine the stories that they tell when they leave after doing that too.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So that's been fun, but it has like got me in tremendously better shape and helped me. You know, the weird thing is, obviously it's helped me physically to be, you know, in better shape, have better endurance, better strength, all that. So that's been great. But mentally is actually where I feel like it's helped me probably even more, because we go through stuff every single day that makes me, I mean, it's fun, but miserable at the same time. You push yourself to limits, way past your limits every single day. So your mental threshold actually changes in real life on a daily basis. And in the race car, when you're in a miserable situation, you're hot, you're sweating, it's 140 degrees or something, you kind of block some of that out easier. So that's the biggest change.
Isn't that kind of the value, I think, of, I call it the voluntary suffer fest, when you go and you just work out to the point where you just, like, you almost want to throw up because you go, I know what it's like to be incredibly uncomfortable, and I'm comfortable with that. Because I know, like you said, when you get into one of those situations, you know you're going to get out of it one way or another.
Yep. Yeah, so that's funny you say that. My threshold every day when I go in there and work out is I go and I get right to the point of, okay, if I go any more harder, I'm going to throw up. So I like stay right on the verge of, if I go a tiny bit harder, I'm going to puke.
Yeah.
And that's where I stay through the whole workout.
Don't you love that?
But doing that every day is like, yeah, at first I was like, dude, this is so hard. And mentally it was really taxing on me. But then you just become numb.
Yeah.
It's like, it just, stuff doesn't even bother you anymore.
No. And then you're just like, oh, we just called that Tuesday. It's fantastic. It's a good thing. Exactly. Talk just a little bit about goal setting, because while most of us probably don't have these NASCAR dreams, we all have big things we want to take on. And maybe there are things that other people in our lives don't think we're not necessarily going to do. And so I'm wondering, like, what's your best advice for somebody who has a passion like you did way back, you know, when you were a kid, about pursuing those goals? What are the things you've learned along the way?
I just can't imagine my life of doing anything that I'm not passionate about. It'd be tough. Like, it's so much more fun when you get to live out, and I'm lucky. I'm super lucky that I get to do it. But, no matter what in the world it is, that's what I always tell people is, is do something, whatever your job is, whatever you enjoy, whatever you're good at, you're going to strive and be a whole lot better in life when you do something that you just live for and you love and you're passionate about and you pursue it, versus just doing a grind that you don't enjoy. Then it's tough to be the best at it, because if you don't love it, then it's hard to push yourself.
You also come off to me as incredibly humble about what you've achieved and where you've come from. And you mentioned some of those smaller teams that you race with. It would seem to me in a sport like yours that not burning bridges is also really important. So what are your own real strong beliefs about the way you treat people and the way you interact with people?
Oh, man, you never know how things can come around full circle and the relationship. Yeah, burning bridges, you definitely don't do. And I'm glad I have been so appreciative along the way, but built a lot of great relationships. But I'll give you the one example is right now I'm driving for Levine Family Racing and Toyota. I got and we have an alliance with Joe Gibbs Racing. Ten years ago, I got my start in NASCAR with Joe Gibbs Racing and with Toyota. And fast forward 10 years later, luckily I maintained great relationships with all of them, just became friends and was always appreciative. And 10 years later, those same people had a huge influence on me getting this opportunity today. So you never know
how
things can work out. Yep. So you always be appreciative and nice and thankful to everybody and not ever burn bridges, especially in this little industry.
I love it. I always say I assume I'm going to be working for the interns. So, you know, be nice.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I know you have to get back to the track. So we appreciate you taking some time to join us. And it's really cool to watch you racing. And, you know, we wish you a really good season with the new team and all of that. Like, and congrats on the CrossFit award. I mean, like, that's huge. Probably should have started the whole interview with that.
Thank you for, thanks for the time. Thanks for having me on. It was fun.
What's a great way for us to keep in touch with you on social media?
So my Twitter and Instagram is at Matt D Racing. So anyone can follow me on those. And my Facebook is Matt DiBenedetto Racing, if you can spell my last name.
I know, it's like a little skills test before you get there. And Matt is very funny on Instagram. He has a very dry sense of humor, so you might have to read it a couple times to catch and realize how funny he really is. But it's good stuff. All right, best of luck, and thanks again, Matt.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
First on the scene.
Flames ripped through a Modesto business.
First with the facts.
And one suspect is in custody.
So you're first to know. KCRA 3 News at 4.
Your first chance to get up to speed.
We are the people and we are the power.
To learn what's happening right now.
Another spot fire breaking out across Highway 20.
And to help you prepare for what's next.
When it happens in Northern California, get it first at 4 from the team you trust. KCRA 3 News at 4, where the news comes first.
You know what I think is interesting about him is that I think even if he makes it to the very top of the sport and he's the number one guy, I think he's still going to go out and overachieve.
Oh,
because
That's
just who he is.
I mean, that's all he's done his whole life, right?
Yeah. Do you think he'll be the CrossFitter of the Month again?
I would think at least one more month.
That gauntlet's down. I love how geeked out he got about that. Lots to learn from that, and just that idea of even if other people think you can't do it, show them.
Yeah.
Show them. Love it. All right. If you want to keep up with us on Instagram, you'll find me at Run Read Sip. The show is at Dying to Ask Podcast.
And I am at Producer Jeff.
That's right. You're a good driver, too.
Most of the time.
Yeah, not quite as fast, though. All right. We'll see you next time.
Bye.